It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 18th day of July, 2022. This is The Horn, headon.live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. Hi. I'm Robin. It's Moran Monday on The Horn, and oh Lord, we are not without the Morans, and we're also not without considerable amounts of vile and nasty and heartbreaking and terrifying stories of what happens when right-wing Morans take power. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, consequently, thanks go out to our 18th, 17th, and 16th day of the month subscribers and a la carte contributors. Thank you so much, Lady B, getting us started this evening. And thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, and thank you to Grace and Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you to our dear friend in the far South Pacific. Thank you to Lori. Thank you, Lori. And thank you to Renee and Labor Man. Thanks to Reinhardt on the Virginia coast. And thank you to Mark. And thank you to Zed. Thank you to all of you for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting afloat and alive. Yeah, thank you so much. Let's see here. I'm trying to remember where we finished up fundraising wise. I know this much. I know I made it to the mailbox and a wonderful thing happened. Over at the mailbox, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Over there, a wonderful thing happened, and we knocked out over 2 days' worth of fundraising. So that is profoundly important. And thank you. One individual took care of two have a show on me's. And I think that person knows who they are, and I don't know if they're listening right now, but if you are, thank you so very much, and if you're not, I will email you. Thank you again. So it's a much better day for having it, because we'll just call the fundraising goal $500. So $500, and that'll get us called up all the way to today, which is profound. So thank you very, very kindly. And, of course, if you'd like to participate in the Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Multimedia Madcap Extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, well, run on by, head on .live, and you'll be greeted by Anatole and Squeaky and Theo. And brain just disappeared. Brain disappears a lot. There's not a lot there to disappear in the first place. No. And capably moderated by, you know, me. So, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, so let's call that 470. Thank you, Scott in San Diego. 470, because we closed at 775. We knocked off. No, we'll call it 400. 400. There, that gets us to where we, $400. Thank you. And, thank you so much to the individual who, well, thank you to Brandon and Fennell, and thank you to our individual who shall, for the moment, remain nameless. Thank you. It's a dry heat out Colorado way. Lady B letting me know that it's a toasty, dry heat, balmy 100 degrees. Sounds lovely. No, it doesn't, actually. So this being more in Monday, well, we've got a lot to get into this evening. Let's see here, let's just get this out of the way. I spend more time than I would like to admit, or than is probably good for me, thinking about just how absolutely awful Joe Manchin is. And one of the things that popped into my mind over the weekend was to wonder, and I think the answer is no, if he ever bothers to stop to think about how much he makes the rest of the country, or at least the decent part of the country, absolutely despise West Virginia and West Virginians. Because he does. And that is, that's a very real fact. I mean, I've seen it all over the web. I've experienced it on this program. And frankly, we happy few who tune into this program, our community, largely doesn't despise West Virginia and West Virginians. Because, well, I'm one of the biggest, more ways than one, cheerleaders for this place that there is. I love this place. I love this place the way that, you know, you kind of love a not particularly lovable shelter puppy. That's probably an unfortunate comparison. This place is beautiful. Those of you who came to the Horn Inn know what a gorgeous place. Gorgeous. See what I did there? New River Gorge. Huh? Yeah, don't try this at home. You know what a gorgeous place this is? You know how kind the people can be. And, well, you know me. But we are a decided minority of the country. Most people see West Virginia as being the bunch of inbred hick hillbilly redneck methed up sister fisters who send walking fecal material like Joe Manchin to the Senate time after time after time after time. And I have explained time after time after time after time why that happens. Because there's not much of a, there's not, there are very few people in the state who are willing to challenge him, because once you get on the Joe Manchin shit list, you're on the Joe Manchin shit list for the rest of your natural born days, and there is not a damn thing you can do about it. And he'll never take you off. Once you're an enemy of Joe, you remain an enemy of Joe, and your political career is pretty much over. And, of course, don't have much in the way of political career to speak of, so that's never really slowed me down. And I have talked about and discussed the many and manifest failings and moral culpabilities of Joe Manchin in practically every Democratic Senate office in the United States, and probably, and well, certainly no small number of House offices as well. And frankly, Democrats in this state don't like him much. But we do have enough common sense to know that, well, if we sent you pill pushing Patty Morrissey, the next thing you know, there might be, well, there'd be another, but just shut up. But again, I wonder if he thinks about how much animus he generates against this state. Oh, well, thank you, Matt. Thank you. It's nice to know there's a warm place. Oh, Robin, you're too hard on West Virginia, Matt in San Francisco says. We also think of West Virginians as opiate pill-popping people, too. Yeah. And a lot of us are opiate pill-poppers because of Pill Push and Patty Morrissey, the Attorney General of the state of West Virginia, who, before he was a Attorney General of the state of West Virginia, was a dude from New Jersey who worked for a pharma, worked as a lobbyist for Big Pharma, and helped bring in all those countless goddamned opioid pills, you know, enough to get every single West Virginian hooked several times over, and is now the chief law enforcement officer of the entire state of West Virginia. Isn't it beautiful how that works? Well, that's okay. We put corporate polluters in charge of the ecology and the environment of this state. So why wouldn't we want to push her in the Attorney General's office? And we talk about 2024 a lot because, you know, why not? Because we're not even done with 2022, and Joe will be up in 2024, and it may prove to be an interesting time. He's somewhat weakened. There's been a transformation of the West Virginia Democratic Party. It is now a cult of personality of a different stripe altogether. It's still a cult of personality. It's just that the personalities have changed. And Joe Manchin is still going to do whatever Joe Manchin wants to do. But, you know, the Who sang all those many years ago, "No one knows what it's like to be hated." Well, West Virginia does. And West Virginians do. And it seems like a near impossible task, a Sisyphean task, to try to explain West Virginia politics to people who absolutely do not know West Virginia politics. To explain that we do not get viable candidates, that you know, the only people who primary Joe Manchin are people who have exactly zero or less than zero of a prayer of unseating him in the primary, and that if some progressive, and frankly, it doesn't matter if somebody would primary him who was more conservative than Joe Manchin, that candidate would be billed as the greatest liberals that hail their Che Guevara. Well, they're Che Guevara in a coonskin cap. That's what they are. Because, you know, Republicans are much better at messaging and beating us over the head than we are at doing anything remotely like that to them. So, you know, 24 is probably another year that I'll just leave Joe Manchin's name blank. And, trying to... we're approaching some 350 millions of souls in the United States of America, and Joe Manchin fucked every one of them. Well, okay. However many the billionaires are, no, he made sweet, tender love to them last week. But everybody else got fucked. And now... And you know, it's kind of funny. There's a sort of Cassandra quality to all of this, because I mentioned toward the end of one of the programs last week, either Thursday or Friday, a fantastic article. A bit of a long read, but it's a deep dive, and it needed to be a deep dive, over at Grist. An absolutely excellent article called "What Happened to the War on Coal in West Virginia." Well, I remember, it goes into granular detail about the fall off in national interest in mountaintop removal, which I've been involved in opposing for longer than this radio show has been on the air. It is a toxic process. You all hopefully know by now exactly what mountaintop removal does. You know about the thousands of miles of streams that have been buried throughout central Appalachia, eastern Kentucky, and West Virginia being the two primary victims of mountaintop removal, but Tennessee's in there, and so is Southwest Virginia. Not Southwest Virginia. It gets so confusing here. Not Southwest Virginia, although Southwest Virginia is the sacrifice zone, but the southwestern part of the Commonwealth of Virginia, which is also within the sacrifice zone. So millions of miles of, thousands of miles, a couple of thousand at least, of streams buried. 500 plus mountains blown up irretrievably. Valleys filled in, wildlife runoff, kind of ecocided. And the story at Grist begins with a life account of a, I call him a young man, he's younger than me by far, he's a man, Junior Walk. I was there when Junior was hired at Coal River Mountain Watch, and even when articles are really good, they still manage to get stuff wrong talking about how a stream of anthracite dust and rock pours out of the mountain. No, it's not anthracite. That's bituminous coal, but that's nitpicking. But along the way in this article, what you'll learn is that at one point in time, the anti-mountaintop removal movement was loud and burgeoning, and that it was there was a sort of national environmental focus on the crisis taking place here. But I don't mean to minimize this in any way, but fracking came along, and fracking became, and this is one of the fundamental problems in any sort of left progressive socio-cultural political movements. And that is the fact that, fracking out-sexied mountaintop removal, and all the foundation dollars and all the big green dollars and all the celebrities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, said, see you later, hillbillies, and took off to go and fight fracking, because apparently the environmental movement only has the capacity for one existential crisis at a time. And suddenly mountaintop removal wasn't it anymore. But in the course of all of that, you know, one of our primary focuses was then governor and now senator Joe Manchin. Ah, you thought I'd forgotten about Joe, didn't you? And so we became past masters on might as well use the phrase demonic effect of Joe Manchin on the state that he likes to claim he loves. Of course, I don't think Joe could find Matewan or Mann or Mullins. I don't know why they're all M places on a map, because he doesn't know West Virginia below the Little Kanawha River even exists. It took us years and years and years and years and years and years to get him to even acknowledge that studies exist that showed that people were being killed by his beloved mining practice in southern West Virginia, and he still did nothing about it. And we watched in horror as he was elevated to chair of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, and some of us, being the Manchin Whisperer, tried to tell America, you have no hopes of any climate change legislation whatsoever as long as Joe Manchin wields any power at all. And if you'll pardon me, I know this is a roundabout way of getting there, but the first Moran Monday nomination today, well, yeah, I mean, reality spoken here, right? Today's first Moran Monday nomination, and it's kind of inescapable.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the bit. But the fact of the matter is, since we're playing the Moran Monday Calliope music, maybe inside the Moran Monday tent here, right just a few steps off the Carnival Midway, where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain and heartbreaking attempt to take home a something less than wonderful baby iguana who will break your ass just keeping it in romaine. We've removed all the other morans from the Moran Monday tent. And instead, we have created a temporary display, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, a temporary display behind this thin cybernetic veil of gossamer-like canvas, the Moran Monday tent, a temporary display containing each and every Democrat in the United States Senate. From Chuck Simpleton Schumer on down. With maybe an exception. Well, I said Democrats. I did not include independents. Or at least one independent. I don't know if you caught the Sunday shows over the weekend or not, but Bernie was apoplectic. Breathe, Bernie. Breathe. I mean, I think I saw Bernie as close to being Yosemite Sam as I've ever seen. Bernie was hot. That no good backstabbing, blagstagging, not pole frazzleckin', you blasted reckon. Joe Manchin done, you know, in the coal fields, when inevitably the United Mine Workers back in the beginning of the 20th century would be infiltrated by a scab, an operative for the coal industry. Well, and when it would, far too late, the miners would find out what had been done to them. They had a saying: "We've been sold," and it's a bitter thing when you come to that realization. We've been sold. And I get the idea that maybe there, I don't even know, that maybe there are some members of the United States Senate who are Democrats who are like, wait a minute, we were negotiating with him in good faith. We were giving him everything he wanted, and then he just turned around and fucked us. You get the idea? So, yeah, the Morion Monday tent is full of Democrats this evening. People who, I guess that, you know, I hear that Joe throws a fabulous barbecue on his yacht there, moored in a boatyard in the Potomac Basin there in D.C. And they talk about what a lovely and genial host he is. And he can be that way. He can be smooth and charming. But, you know, Eve didn't talk to the snake because it was screaming at her. That's an unfortunate reference. The serpent has, when the serpent wishes, a way. And so there they were, negotiating away, whether it was, well, and every Democrat in the Senate, oh, Joe's going to work with us on this one, yeah, okay. And Bernie got in on the act, too. It's just that Bernie on Sunday was willing to say, wow, he's a lying sack of shit. Because, in point of fact, Joe Manchin is a lying sack of shit. A lying sack of shit. Oh, yeah, maybe we can do something about climate change this year. You simpletons! You fools! You addle-pated jackanapes! He's a coal broker! He's made hundreds of millions of dollars off the coal industry. Now, why in God's name would a coal broker do something about climate change? Why? You might as well just ask somebody, have Jesus pop back in and say, give all your wealth to the poor and follow me. Joe Manchin would have second coming Jesus tied hand and foot and thrown in a coal impoundment somewhere in Raleigh County. Never to be heard from again. Until the dam burst and maybe his carbon-coated bones went bobbing along in a wave of toxic waste 40 to 60 feet high through the Coal River Valley. God! You know what? Funding this program is hard enough. I think what I want to do is I need a couple of friends. We'll have three card tables. We'll set up the card tables outside the three Senate office buildings, Russell, Dirksen, and Hart, and one of us will sit at each table dealing three-card Monty. Playing three-card Monty. All it takes is three cards. That's why it's called three-card Monty. Find the queen. See, there's the queen. There's the queen. See, move around, move around. There's the queen. There's the queen. Nope, nope, there's the queen. Oh, goodness me. Oh, this is easy. And what'll happen is all the Republicans will come walking out of the building, and they'll go, ha, look at that. They're dealing three-card Monty in front of the Senate office building. Well, I'll never fall for something like that. I mean, I might have fallen for Donald Trump, but I won't fall for three-card Monty. Oh, but then the Democrats will come out, and they'll pull up chairs. Oh, this is easy. Find the queen, win every time, win every time. Find the queen. And they'll play. And we will take all their money. Because it's a dishonest game. And the only people who don't know that you can't win at three-card Monty are simpletons, morons, idiots, you know, the same kind of people who believe Joe Manchin when he says maybe we can get something done about climate change this year. And so we come round to the fact that, yes, Joe sits as chair of Senate Natural Resources, but he also has another plum committee assignment. Because, you know, Joe's a businessman. Joe knows business. Because Joe runs a business. You know, a coal brokerage. And Joe's just got business in his blood. That's how come his daughter Heather was able to dummy up a master's degree from West Virginia University and find herself as the CEO of Mylan Pharmaceuticals long enough to make a few bajillion dollars and then retire at the age of 50 and watch Mylan Pharmaceuticals throw countless West Virginians under the bus and move their operations out of West Virginia, where they had been sort of, you know, headquartered because Mylan Pushkar had founded them there. Mylan was a big fan, a big friend of Joe Manchin's, too. Yeah, old Joe, so he's got a seat on the Appropriations Committee. And Joe and his wife, Gail, whom I guess Joe Biden was trying to curry some favor with Joe Manchin when he made her the head of the Appalachian Regional Commission. Oh, my God. They've got a cabin. I love it when gajillionaires talk about their cabins. Yeah, it's not exactly that Jed running back into the cabin to get Granny and Ellie Mae and have Jethro drive them to Beverly Hills. Cement ponds, movie stars. No, Joe and Gail have a mansion. It's the mansion. In a part of West Virginia where ain't nobody ever going to set off so much as a firecracker going after a lump of coal. Oh, it's under there, all right. But Joe is nothing if not NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard. And we've known about this for several years. That's kind of why I referenced Coal River Mountain Watch and the other grassroots activists in this state. It's a beautiful area. You should see it. He lives in an area known as Canaan Valley, C-A-N-A-A-N. The rest of the world calls that Canaan. In West Virginia, it's Canaan. And it's described as an unadulterated watershed surrounded by the Dolly Sods Wilderness, the Canaan Valley National Wildlife Refuge, and Blackwater Falls State Park, which, curiously, is Blackwater Falls not because of any nearby coal. It is, without a doubt, an exquisitely beautiful area. So sitting there on the Senate Appropriations Committee, while hundreds of thousands of acres of southern West Virginia lie unreclaimed. I mean, it's worth remembering in terms of mountaintop removal that less than 5% of all mountaintop removal sites have ever been reclaimed within the meaning of the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. Well, he got $7 million to rebuild the visitor center at the Canaan Valley National Wildlife Refuge. That sits about a mile from his cabin. And he likes to keep it nice there. And Gail, meanwhile, has been doing her part to spruce up the neighborhood where the cabin is. She got, as head of the Appalachian Regional Commission, $25,000 in funding for what's called source water analysis in the Canaan Valley. And then she found another $1.2 million laying around for a Biden administration power grant that would connect and improve the trails in the area. According to an article in The Intercept by Daniel Bogoslaw, is that a real name? Bogoslaw. It's a great name. Gail Manchin, quote, has directed millions of dollars in federal grants to projects tied to her personal investments. And also noting, gosh, breaking news, that the Manchin supports some of the most environmentally catastrophic fossil fuel extraction projects in the country while launching attacks on the federal government's ability to pursue environmental regulation as the chair of Senate Energy and Natural Resources. Charming, isn't it? Among those disgusted and furious is outgoing, and I mean that in both senses. He's a charming man, he's a brilliant legislator, and he's also leaving. One of my heroes in the House of Representatives, Representative John Yarmuth, the man who had the courage, Congress in and Congress out, to reintroduce the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act, H.R. 2073, in this waning Congress. And I will beg you, no, seriously, begging, please, to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073. We would have been up there working hammer and tongs on getting more co-sponsors on the bill, but COVID has changed everything. And we can't just go up there and spend a couple of weeks anymore because you can't get into an office without a written invitation now. So what we need is grassroots support for the bill, H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, AIC. And it's the only bill that's ever been introduced in the Congress that would have the power to end the decades-long nightmare that has been mountaintop removal. Some of the most environmentally catastrophic fossil fuel extraction projects in the country. That's a really fancy way of saying mountaintop removal. And most of us are fighting mountaintop removal pretty much on our own these days. Just not a whole lot of help out there anymore. Because, again, we got out sexied by fracking. Oh, well. But you can still You can still help by asking your member of the House to co-sponsor H.R. 2073. And we need to add lots more names to it so that maybe we can get it, get another committee hearing, get it voted out of committee. And send it over to the House, or send it over to the Senate, so, you know, Joe Manchin can do a number on it. But John Yarmuth is disgusted, and among other things, he is suggesting that perhaps Joe Manchin would not be the best person to run Senate Energy and Natural Resources. Talking to reporters this past Friday, Representative Yarmuth said, "It doesn't matter what I advise. The Senate is the Senate. It doesn't matter what any of us do. It doesn't matter what the administration does. We've got one person who's trying to dictate policy for the entire country, and it's a shame." And John Yarmuth, being a brilliant man, went on to point out that the Senate is the most undemocratic institution there is. The Senate is tilted to small, rural, white states, and they have rules that exacerbate the minority rule. And unfortunately, we have one member that thinks he knows better than any other Democrat. I would go to Lisa Murkowski and ask if she'd like to be chair of the Energy Committee. That's what I'd do. But nonetheless, the Democratic simpletons in the Senate negotiated with Joe Manchin, thinking that he could be bargained with in good faith. Flavio says, you know, Bernie was on fire. I had him on a loop, couldn't stop replaying. But tell us, Senator Sanders, how you really feel about Senator Manchin. That no good black dragon, not Paul Frazelak and Martin. More of that candor, Flavio says. I'm sick of all the decorum. And so, while John Yarmuth's suggestion is interesting, nothing's going to happen. Not a damned thing. And for what it's worth, well, a plucky little band of human rights and environmental activists have been trying to tell the nation that anything that they want to get done that relies on Joe Manchin is a dead letter. It's DOA. Now, Joe Biden, and look, there are multiple, you know, there are multiple layers of perfidy involved in all of this. Sure, Joe Manchin will do whatever he can to prop up. It doesn't matter that there are less than 12,000 mining jobs left in West Virginia. It doesn't take that many people to take down thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of pristine temperate rainforest mountainscapes. 10 guys with some D9 cats and some drills and some ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives and some giant-ass dump trucks and take down 5,000 acres in 5 years. And those guys think they're making out like bandits because they make maybe $60,000, $70,000 a year doing it. And some of them at the end of their lives, which comes much too soon, well, they wind up with that added bonus of the coal worker. Black Lung. So, well, for some reason or another, I think it's because he's not a Democrat, but that's me. Joe wants to tank the Biden presidency. I guess that's the spot in the history books that he wants to occupy. Destroyed the presidency of Joe Biden. Now, Joe is putting on the brave face. Over at Reuters, there's a story by McKinney Bryce today. Biden says he'll act on climate after Manchin delays legislation. In a prepared statement, Joe Biden, the President of the United States, ostensibly the most powerful man on earth, hamstrung by a coal dust covered coalocrat from West Virginia, said, "The Senate will not move to tackle the climate crisis and strengthen our domestic clean energy industry. I will take strong executive action to meet this moment." Of course, whatever Joe Biden does only affects federal executive branch agencies. But Joe continues to lie. He said to that guy, that grown man who still calls himself Hoppy, "I want climate. I want an energy policy. I would not put myself through this if I wasn't sincere." Put yourself through what, Joe? Having a camera in your face every time that you appear in public, you love that. You adore that. Being fawned over by Republican right-wing billionaires and having them give you money. You know, just leave it on the table, y'all. Leave it on the nightstand. Democratic Senator Martin Heinrich, who of New Mexico, who earned himself a ticket out of the Moran Monday tent, said Senator Manchin's refusal to act is infuriating. Sheldon Whitehouse, one of my heroes in the Senate from Rhode Island, lucky you, Charlene, is suggesting that President Biden could impose a carbon border tariff on imports from countries that have worse carbon emissions, that he could require carbon capture from major emitters and impose stronger emissions controls on vehicles. That's true. And then if there's a Republican president in 2024, just undo all of it. I mean, we have been to that movie, haven't we? It's infuriating. And maybe this is that point where we just say, "Hey, look, kids," and I mean literally kids, you know, little ones laying in their bassinets like my darling little granddaughter. "Hey, kid, sorry. Some of us wanted to leave you a better planet, or one that at least had a fighting chance, but, oh well, Joe Manchin says no." And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing as a West Virginian. I would hope he is an embarrassment to decent people in the Senate. And God knows they've tried. I mean, the aforementioned Sheldon Whitehouse. made nicey-nicey talk with Joe Manchin and said, I want you to come on up to Rhode Island. We're right on the sea. And I want you to see what climate change is doing to my state. And then I'll come down there and we'll see what climate change is doing to West Virginia. Oh, by the way, the Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice declared a significant chunk of southern West Virginia to be a disaster area a few days back because it rained and 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 it rained. And then it flooded and flooded and flooded and flooded and flooded and flooded and flooded. That's climate change. But it's also a whole bunch of denuded mountaintops that used to serve as a place where the rain, temperate rainforest, y'all. And the soil is thin, but it's absorptive, and it sucks up, but not anymore. Because there's no soil. And there's no mountain. There's no trees. Some scrubby-ass grass. Hydro-seeded. And so the rain falls and the rain runs and water seeks its own level. And the next thing you know, you got Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice down there saying, in no way, shape, form, or fashion are we going to let the good people of McDowell County get floated away because I'm a billionaire who does mountaintop removal. Yeah. So it seemed like a good place to start as far as Moran Monday was concerned. Trying to find the there we go, that might be it. I was looking for the Bernie Sanders clip. Because it, even though, you know, in typical fashion, it don't come to nothing, Senator Sanders. All your Miss Mayellas, it don't come to nothing. But still, it's nice to hear somebody get pissed off about what Joe Manchin, his perfidy, you know, his Dante-esque ninth layer of hell betrayal amounts to. Here, from ABC News.
Senator Bernie Sanders says that Senator Joe Manchin is intentionally sabotaging President Biden's agenda after Manchin said he wouldn't support Democrats' climate change legislation. Take a listen to this.
So when Manchin sabotages climate change, this is for future generations. What's going on right now in the West, all over the world, we're looking at significantly increased, more and more heat waves. You're going to look at more drought, more flooding. This is an existential threat to humanity.
Now, Manchin says he wants to see inflation rates go down before adding any measures that could add to the rising costs. He says that he would back a bill that focused solely on health care measures like prescription drug prices. ABC's Kenneth Moten joining me now live for more from here in our nation's capital. So, Kenneth, how are Democrats reacting to the latest rebuke from Joe Manchin now?
Well, Kara, no surprise, they're not happy, especially the progressive wing of the party. You heard Bernie Sanders there. As they see this Joe Manchin effect really unravel and tank the Biden agenda, but many supporters of those climate change initiatives and tax increases on the wealthy will point out this is not only about the Biden agenda. As you just saw in Inez's report there, many Democrats and supporters of those initiatives believe that this is about saving the country, saving the world, that
only because it is. But, you know, Bernie really did unload on Joe, and deservedly so. Among other things, Bernie saying that Joe represents only the wealthiest people in this country, which is true. And even that can get significantly narrowed, because remember rule one, anyone named Manchin never does anything for anyone, does anything that directly benefits anyone who isn't named Manchin.
I want to turn to Congress and the agenda there. Senator Joe Manchin, of course, abruptly pulled the plug this week on the Democrats.
No, Martha, he didn't abruptly. Martha.
He abruptly on Friday.
He didn't
did
abruptly
that.
Do anything.
He was
he
negotiating
has sabotaged
for a while.
The president's agenda. No, look. If you check the record, 6 months ago, I made it clear that you have people like Manchin, Sinema to a lesser degree, who are intentionally sabotaging the president's agenda, what the American people want, what a majority of us in the Democratic caucus want. Nothing new about this. And the problem was that we continue to talk to Manchin like he was serious. He was not. This is a guy who is a major recipient of fossil fuel money, a guy who has received campaign contributions from 25 Republican billionaires.
Senator, I want. You say he wasn't serious, but Manchin says his main goal is to do what's good for West Virginia, and he's worried about inflation. Listen to what he told the West Virginia radio station. Listen to this, please.
Is that right?
Inflation is absolutely killing many, many people. They can't buy gasoline. They have a hard time buying groceries. Everything they buy and consume for their daily lives is a hardship to them.
Yeah, hold on. For Joe Manchin to say that inflation is killing... No, Joe. 1,000 statistical excess deaths take place every year in the counties where the mountaintop removal that you fucking love takes place. 1,000 human beings. When you rule out the biscuits and gravy with the biscuits and gravy on top, when you rule out the 5 packs a day of Sonoma cigarettes and the off-branded snuff and the Keystone Light and the badass booze, when you rule out everything bad that West Virginians do, there's 1,000 people more who are dead, because they live near mountaintop removal. And Joe Manchin, inflation's absolutely killing people. Yeah. And Bernie's not having any of it. And this the poor simpleton multimillionaire from the for-profit media, abruptly. No, he only did it Friday. It was abrupt. Don't say anything bad about Joe Manchin. We like for him to come on the program. We're all about access here, not facts.
Many, many people. They can't buy gasoline. They have a hard time buying groceries. Everything they buy and consume for their daily lives is a hardship to them.
Your reaction to that, Senator?
Well, look, the same nonsense that Manchin has been talking about for a year. West Virginia is a beautiful state. I've had the pleasure of being there. Great people. It is one of the poorest states in this country. You ask the people of West Virginia whether they want to expand Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and eyeglasses. You ask the people of West Virginia whether we should demand that the wealthiest people and large corporations start paying their fair share of taxes. Ask the people of West Virginia whether or not all people should have health care as a human right like in every other country on earth. That's what they will say. In my humble opinion.
Well, maybe, Bernie. Or maybe you ask West Virginians all those things, and you know what they say back? Let's go, Brandon! Because I live here. I haven't had the privilege of visiting like Bernie has. I live here. And I see the Trump flags, and I see the Let's Go Brandons and the Fuck Joe Bidens. I've kind of documented that kind of, and it goes back, it's very much pre-Trump. And it is something that has to be taken into consideration. It has to be factored in. Yeah, West Virginians like the soak the fat boys rhetoric. A lot of us do. But there's a whole lot of Stockholm Syndrome here, too. I wish it was not so, but it is. So funny, the same Appalachian Mountains that are in Vermont are in West Virginia. Ours just happen to have some coal under them. And yet they are two remarkably different places. Among other things, it actually gets warm here once in a while. That's a joke. But Bernie's not wrong. Joe's been Lucy with the football the entire time. And only if you're one of the ones who got snowed by Joe do you feel like maybe that's not the case, because that would involve you having to admit, and it's very hard for little neotenous primates like us human beings, it's very hard for us to say, got fooled. I mean, I don't know Martin Heinrich's disgust. I mean, he was furious. But is he furious because he's just now figured out that he got had by a con artist? This is one of those moments you go back to the W.C. Fields Three Commandments. And the first one is, you can't cheat an honest man. If every member of the United States Senate who entered into negotiations with Joe Manchin, if every Democrat who entered into negotiations with Joe Manchin had gone in there knowing he's a con artist, knowing he's a sketchy coal millionaire, knowing that he will do anything in his power to protect his beloved coal industry, then maybe you realize that you didn't have a they never had a chance. All that chatting, all that talking, all that swanning around on Joe's goddamn barge. It was just a con. I mean, look at some of the people who've given Joe money. Bill Gates, former Virgin Galactic CEO George Whitesides, Morris Goldfarb owns G3 Apparel Group, and that means he owns Tommy Hilfiger and Calvin Klein and DKNY and Karl Lagerfeld. The CEO class has been maxing out on Manchin. Banker Warren Stevens, hotel executive Tom Baltimore, Motorola CEO Greg Brown, Home Depot CEO Edward Decker, Yum Brand CEO David Gibbs, Gillette CEO James Kilt, and Robert Kraft and his son Jonathan, who are also big maggots. That's an interesting Venn diagram now, isn't it? Yeah. And I wish I had an answer. I mean, I know what the answer is. I do have an answer. And the answer is what I posited at least a year back, and which other, you know, more brilliant, more exposed influencers have finally begun to point out. You have to do to Joe Manchin what Douglas MacArthur did to the Japanese army in World War II. Cut him off. Go around him. Isolate him. That was MacArthur's island hopping campaign back in the Second World War. There were some places that were, you know, heavily fortified by the Imperial Japanese Army and Navy, Army primarily. And so he essentially cut them off from their supply lines and just let them starve. Well, Joe's not going to starve. But you can go around him. I know we get so angry and we so badly want to do something about this, and we want to do it now because of the sense of urgency that attaches to issues of the climate. And just as is the case in the discussion over the citizenship of women and people who can become pregnant, where the urgency is now, where the moment is now, there is nothing more frustrating than being told to get off your, make sure you vote and get off your ass and try to get others to do so too. But as someone who has marched, who has held signs, who has trod the literally miles and miles and miles inside Senate and House office buildings, working on issues that are existential to Central Appalachia, that's important. But the battle lines are largely drawn. Riding up and down in front of the troops, giving stirring speeches with your face painted blue on, and you're on horseback. We few, we plucky few, we band of siblings. It's great. It's wonderful pageantry, but it doesn't do anything. In this country, with the system we have, you got one thing: voting. And voting, you know, voting with extreme prejudice. Turning your one vote into 10 by getting 9 other people to come with you. And talking about it. And being kind of relentless and remorseless about it. And so, whether it's climate change or, like Bernie was talking about, expanding Medicare for dental and vision, and don't let the inflation paranoids like Manchin fool you on that. I'm old enough to remember that, going all the way back to the early days of this century, back when and even before this century, when the economy was booming under Bill Clinton, the Republicans were wandering around, clutching their pearls and wringing their little hands. Oh, the inflation monster gonna eat us alive. Oh, my stars and garters. And then W took power, and they spent money like drunken sailors, and, you know, Richard B. big-time Dick Cheney before he dicks you was asked, you know, but what about the inflation, Mr. Vice President?
Well, you have to understand when we're in power, when Republicans are in power, inflation doesn't matter. It's not that big a deal.
It happened. It really, really happened. And so now Democrats in charge, and inflation is suddenly the monster out under the bed that has decided to emerge out from under thereof. Let the oligarchs and the plutocrats and the monsters give money to Joe Manchin. That's fine. You know, they're paying their vig. They're doing respect. But if voters in Pennsylvania can send John Fetterman to the Senate, if voters in Ohio can send Tim Ryan, who is decidedly a problematic, might be another Manchin, but if voters in Missouri can send a non-Republican to the Senate, Wisconsin, you have your job. You have one job. Do it. Get rid of the one of the Three Stooges, who is quite possibly the dumbest man in the Senate. Georgia, you saved us once. Save us again. Give Reverend Warnock a six full year term. Because believe you me, no matter how funny it is to watch Herschel Walker say stupid things, it ain't going to be funny watching him be a senator. But more to the point, hold all our seats. Pick up a couple more. You know, three, four. I mean, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida. Dare to dream. Kentucky, dare to dream. You have a brilliant progressive candidate there going up against Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. And wouldn't it be lovely to send that man and his, that thing on his head, riding off into the, his libertarian sunset? That's five? Get behind these movements. Get behind these struggles. And then we can tell Joe Manchin to go and vote no. Vote no with the Republicans. Have a high old time doing it, Joey. You know it's what you want to do. It's what you've been doing. Do it. And we'll get some good government in the meantime. You do all that, you can carve out a filibuster exception in order to enshrine the rights of women to autonomy over the workings of their own body. You can do that. I say there because I don't have a female reproductive system, so I'm not inclusive in that. I know it's been an hour, but it's been more than an hour. But I felt like we had to get into this. One little bit of inspiring news. I saw this just earlier, breaking news by Reuters. Here in West Virginia, Kanawha County Judge Tara Salango has made it possible for the one women's reproductive health clinic in this state to resume its work. Judge Salango blocked enforcement of a bill from the 1870s that banned abortions. Women's Health Center of West Virginia had argued that the law was effectively repealed by more modern post-Roe statutes that hopelessly conflict with the old one, allowing for abortion up to the 20th week of pregnancy. Judge Salango said, "It simply does not matter if you are pro-choice or pro-life. Every citizen in this state has a right to clearly know the laws under which they are expected to live. Or die." Well, pill-pushing Patty Morrissey, our Attorney General, is on the wrong side of history and the wrong side of this issue, naturally, of course, because he's a fetus fetishist. He wanted a law passed by men over women's bodies who could not even vote back then, let alone sit in the legislature and deliberate. He wanted that law reinstated. He wanted it to take effect all over again. And so they're going to be back in business. They're going to be back serving the women who desperately need them. You know, the women who already have a couple of kids who don't want any more. Who tried and somehow wound up. Or not. Maybe, you know, never mind talking about the rationale for why. Because it's her right. You know, the same thing white guys talk about when they talk about going and buying a Freedom Protector gun penis extension. "Well, I'm doing it because it's my right. You don't need to know why I need no AR-15. I got a right to have an AR-15, and I'm going to have an AR-15. See how it works? I think we do. But, you know, good on Tara Salango. Got it right. And now, huffing and puffing and grunting, pill-pushing Patty Morrissey will trundle his massive bulk over to the Supreme Court and argue in front of the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be nonpartisan, which is another way to get nonpartisan electing of judges. Is just a way for Republicans to hide the R behind their name. And maybe they'll overturn it. But at this point in time, the struggle is for every minute, every second, in hopes of buying more time. So, you know, I guess we can call that, well, we will. We'll call that a win for now. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Caitlin Bernard, who performed the abortion for the 10-year-old rape victim, we talked about how her lawyers sent a nasty gram to the Attorney General of Talibandiana, saying, lay off, or we're going to sue your ass. The news is in. Dr. Bernard, being a competent medical professional, did in fact do all the paperwork exactly right. And she did not violate HIPAA when she talked to a news outlet about the fact that a child from a rape victim from Ohio had had to come to Talibandiana to get reproductive care. Indiana University Health conducted an investigation with full cooperation of Dr. Bernard and other IU Health team members. IU Health's investigation found Dr. Bernard in compliance with privacy laws. This, of course, will not shut the Talibandiana Attorney General up. And speaking of Talibandiana, the NRA roulette wheel of death came to a stop there. Four people are dead from a mall shooting. And as Lee in New York points out, the Second Amendment types are hooting and hollering about the good guy with the gun. Those four dead people they don't mention. Of course not. And they also don't mention that the good guy with the gun is a goddamn rarity. As Lady B points out, a good guy with a gun took out a mass shooter. Is this our future? Will we have to count on every motherfucker with a gun who thinks they'll be the hero and walk around strapped waiting for the opportunity to show off their gun range skills? Was he heroic? I guess he did stop the guy, but it wasn't his job. It shouldn't be anyone's job but the police and security, but they can't be everywhere. And even when they're there, all too often, as we have learned, sadly, to our manifest grief from Uvalde, they ain't there. Why don't we just ban the sale of semi-automatic weapons and automatic? I mean, automatic weapons are banned. You can't have a fully automatic machine gun out there without a significant amount of licensing. Why don't we just ban the sale of semi-automatic weapons at this point? Will it make any difference? This is the world we live in, and these are the hands we're given. I know the song. We're all in constant danger of a mass shooting, and the only comeback we hear is that we need to keep selling guns to protect us from people with guns. It's like a goddamn bad movie script, and we're enjoying every stupid second of it. It's like none of us want to live in peace, to enjoy our pursuit of happiness. We are being held hostage to fear and paranoia. I just can't stand it anymore. I just want to come home from work and drink and get high. There's no fucking point to any of this. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting its shroud over all we have known. Unaware how the ranks have grown, driven on by a heart of stone, we could find that we're all alone in the dream of the proud. We need a leader, Lady B notes. We need someone who can make this better. Not happy about our prospects. What are we going to do if the people we elect don't do what we ask them to do? Keep going, Robin. Find a way to fight for us. Sell beet juice if you have to. We need hope. Show us the way. Trying, Lady B. Sustain the outrage. Go to protests. At this point in time, it's a heroic act of considerable danger. If you can be present for a protest in support of women's rights, be there. If you can attend a climate change rally, be there. If, for God's sakes, if you can be there to demand action on guns, be there. Showing up is half the battle. And I'm not speaking specifically to you, Lady B. You know that. We need to start taking seriously the idea of getting off of our seats and onto our feet. A lot of us have wondered all our lives what we would do, what it would be like when the day finally came. Nothing has ever been asked of my generation. So here we are. My generation, the men of which we know from a study from a couple of years ago, have shown a shocking propensity to die young. One of my nearest and dearest friends became one of those statistics in the summer of 2017, about this time, 5 years ago. We named a cat after him because I just thought it would be nice to walk around and say, "Hi, Kyle. Hey, Kyle. Love you, man." And I like to think that if there's a spirit world, because Kyle was deeply into cats. Oh, he loved his cats. And when I saw this Kyle, I kind of knew that he had to be Kyle. Because he looked a lot like one of Kyle's old cats named Vinny. Because Kyle had a cat named Vinny. Back in the day. But this generation has been called on to do precisely nothing. we kind of crept past the graveyard where Vietnam's concerned. You know, the very last of the boomers and the very beginning, in the beginning of Gen X. In September of 2001, George Bush told us that we could all be heroes by going shopping and flying to Disney World. I'm still waiting for my went shopping merit badge to show up. But now, we live in a time, thanks to the same policies of the likes of George W. Bush and all the other Republicans. Going shopping is a fucking heroic act. Four people in Taliban, Indiana said, you know, I'm going to go to the mall. And did not come home from the mall. I mean, we're living in Shane, and we've got and there are just Jack Palances all over the place.
Pick up the gun.
I don't want no trouble, mister.
Pick up the gun, you heard me. Pick up the gun.
Bang!
You all saw he had a gun.
And, the Greenwood Park Mall in Taliban, Indiana turned into an abattoir on Sunday. A burst of about 20 to 30 shots of gunfire in the food court. Because freedom.
And a good guy with a gun brought it all to a halt. Guns. It's what's for dinner.
A 22-year-old person pulled a gun, lawfully carrying a firearm, and blew away the gunman almost as soon as the suspect opened fire on Sunday, as the Reuters report puts it. Almost! Almost doing a lot of work there. Carrying four dead bodies on Almost's back. Now, the lawful gun owner, on the other hand, well, he had a semi-automatic rifle. Elijah Dickin, engaged the suspect. He had gone to the mall with his girlfriend. And now he's a hero. And Greenwood Police Chief Jim Eisen said that, well, he needs some restraint by the media because he needs space and time to process what he's gone through. It's a pity we can't give him a 3-month paid vacation like we give cops when they blow away some black dude. I really wish the copy editing was a little better at Reuters, because this passage seems troubling. The shooting lasted just 2 minutes from the time the suspect opened fire until he was killed. Just 2 minutes to wipe out how many years of combined human life experience. Just 2 minutes to end the universe. For innocence. Shooter spent an hour in the restroom assembling his gun and screwing his courage to the sticking place. Chief Eisen said, "Many more people would have died last night if not for a responsible armed citizen that took action very quickly within the first 2 minutes of the shooting." And, of course, the shooter, 20-year-old Jonathan Douglas Sapperman, S-A-P-I-R-M-A-N, a local resident who lived alone, kept to himself. Back in May, he quit his warehouse job and recently got evicted from his apartment. Had two rifles and a handgun with several magazines of ammunition, over 100 rounds of bullets, and he shot about 24 of them. Three people killed, two others wounded at the time of the report. It's now four. A husband and wife entered eternity together. He was 56 and she was 37. This time, because, well, good guy with a gun, the National Rifle Association decided they had something to say.
"We will say it again. The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun."
You know, except the way you stop a bad guy with a gun is with a good, an old good guy with a folding chair. That was Birmingham, wasn't it? Only two out of 61 active shooter attacks last year were ended by good guys with guns. In 433 mass shootings since 2000, the New York Times found that only 22 of the 433 gunmen were shot by a good guy with a gun. And by the way, thanks to legislation signed by the Talibandiana governor, Eric Holcomb, anybody who's 18 years of age who isn't legally prohibited from firearm possession can now carry concealed in the state of Talibandiana. We've lived under this state of siege for several years now here in West Virginia. Of course, before that, we had open carry,
guaranteed by the West Virginia Constitution.
Another one of those laws made by a bunch of men. No input from women. And, of course, you know, that self-same Talibandiana Attorney General, the guy that was sliming and libeling and slandering Dr. Bernard for saving the life of a 10-year-old rape victim. Well, it was his action stating that private businesses and property owners may restrict gun owners from carrying a weapon on their property, but don't have to. And Talibandiana has a gun owner's bill of rights. And it says that penis extension freedom protector possessors are free to ignore any no firearms sign at a private business. And what that effectively means is that if, say, you and your freedom protector ignore the no firearms sign and go swanning on into a business, then the business owner has to take their own lives in their hands and say, "Listen, I mean it. No firearms in here. You gotta go." And then they'll grunt about more Second Amendment rights when the proprietor takes their life in their hands and dials 911 and says, I got a guy in here with a gun. I've told him to leave, and he's grunting about his Second Amendment rights. And probably in a place like Talibandiana, about 90% of the time, the 911 dispatch will say, why do you hate freedom? They ain't doing nothing. They just got a gun. We ain't going to send a cop for nothing like that. Jesus, this country. And there he is. Little white boy. Curly ginger hair. Oh well. I filibustered half the show away. And there's ever so much more to get to. We have a $400 fundraising goal. It would be great if we could just knock some of that out. $100 and we are actually finished with last week, which is super duper profound. And if we could not goose egg tonight, it would be fantastic. Of course, we're not goose egging. Lady B got us started. She got us down to that $400 part. Thank you, Lady B. Ignore signs. Hold on here. Ignore signs. Matt in San Francisco with a question. So are we able to ignore stop signs, caution, flammable signs? This just seems like there's so much adventure ahead. It's all adventure. It's turtles all the way down, Matt. Thank you, Jeremy. We are now down to 390. Thank you. Thank you so much. Proper response. Lee in New York says, when the NRA says the only thing that stops a bad guy a gun is a good guy with a gun, shout, Uvalde! There, yeah. Well, point taken. But I think, point taken, Jeremy. Not gonna be, but yeah. Ralph says, it's cool that you named one of your cats Kyle. I named one of my cats Kayla after a character in one of the books I like. Oh, and I got to thinking, and I told Annette about this earlier. Socks is, well, he's got little white socks, so that was obvious. And you know, and Ferg still calls him Caesar because we thought, you know. But I came up with an oh-so-clever one today, and I think it's going to stick. Working on the socks theme, and since we've got a Lucy purr, wait for it. Socks-ra-tees. Ha? Yeah? Nya-nya. Socks-ra-tees. Socks-ra-tees. Of course socks-ra-tees. Necessarily socks-ra-tees. You are correct, socks-ra-tees. That's nice. And thank you, Ralphs. We are now down to 380. Thank you, Ralphs. Let's do. Maybe that'll turn into some momentum. Remember, we have a subscription doubling offer on the table, courtesy of Zed out in Iwija. Five people. For the first five people who either at Patreon or PayPal subscribe this month, get their first month's $10 subscription doubled to $20, and that's a big deal. So if you'd like to see your money doubled that way, I'd love for that to happen. Subscribing's easy. There's the Patreon. Interface is under the contribute tab at headon.live. The PayPal button is just right there, and you just say, you know, make this happen every month. Tick the little box. Yeah. Oh, and technical matter, and I am going to the phones. Ben Birch busted ass and has gotten WhiteRoseSociety.org back up and running. And so we are sending on the White Rose stream and the HeadOn.live stream, and I will upload the programs that I wasn't able to upload to White Rose. I'll sit there this evening after the program and get that all done. And that's a great relief, because you know, some people do like to download the program from WhiteRoseSociety.org, others from Podbean. And by the way, thank you to Ben Birch. Brother Deacon Asa says, I call bullshit. There was no good guy with a gun. That asshole was a crisis actor placed there by the likes of the NRA. See how easy it is? Yeah, two can play at that game. By the way, the cops did come along and take the good guy with a gun into custody. And they seized his weapon. So, doesn't matter. Yeah. Oh, there was some other little technical something I was going to mention. I'll remember it. The good guy, Lady B says, now every goddamn news and daytime talk program will ask the good guy for an interview. He's a hero. And I fucking hate it. Go ahead and give him his flowers, but it shouldn't have to be that way. People will act like everywhere is the fucking Wild West. No regular person should have to act as cops. That's why we have cops. But we have so many guns, regular people will cape up and start acting like cowboys. And how will the good guy feel about the shooting afterwards? Explain that to me, gun carriers. That's your sole reason for owning a gun anyway, right? That one fucking moment. I mean, I know you'll have no problem sleeping at night, but Jesus, how? Are you cool with playing fucking cop now? This will end horribly. People will be caught in the crossfire. It's sickening we've reached this point. Fucking disgusting. Yes, it is. And it will not end well. P.S. Socks Ritties? Wait a minute. How about Chairman Meow? Ow! If there's a... Well, please, no more kittens. But Chairman Meow is at the top of the list if there are. That's too good, Lady B. I'll suggest it to other people with kittens. Name that one Chairman Meow. You'll thank me later. I'll thank Lady B later. Yeah, Ben Birch did a heck of a job, Ralphs. I'm glad you agree. Leah, New York, says, my daughter brought two cats into my home. I called him Abyss because he cannot be filled. She is Kvetch for her complaining. Abyss and Kvetch. And when you stare at Abyss, does Abyss stare back? That's kind of important. Yeah. New rule, says Silent R. Lamar, only good guy with gun must be white. I haven't seen the good guy. Have we seen the good guy with the gun? Have they published a photo? Don't know. Okay, well, let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin. It's Dave reporting from the shooting gallery that is Taliban, Indiana.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Well, I don't go out to the Greenwood Park Mall that much, but it is a beautiful building.
I saw it. It looks like it's like round, isn't it? It's a round mall?
No, it's not round, but there's like a turret in the front of it.
Oh, okay.
And it's glass, and it was built in the late 70s.
I'm amazed that it's still a going concern.
Barely.
Yeah, because
malls
are
enough people in there to shoot.
Yeah, Gee, stop that. Surprised her or not. Well, I mean, they are oftentimes echo chambers now, what once were just, you know, full of happy little consumers.
Yeah, about the only thing that goes in there is the food court. A lot of shops in there are closed. I had a relative on Christine's side of the family used to work in a shoe store there. And we'd go in and see her occasionally. But I have friends who live in Greenwood, which, for those of you who don't understand Indiana geography, is a suburb of Indianapolis.
I honestly didn't know Indiana had geography. I thought it was just a flat place where if you dropped a marble, it wouldn't move.
Robin?
Yes, Dave?
Give yourself a cowbell and give Lady B a cowbell for Chairman Meow.
There they are. Yeah, I should have awarded the cowbell right off the bat for Chairman Meow.
Yes, you should have. Your whole song.
I am remiss.
But Greenwood is a suburb of Indianapolis. And it is much further to the right than, let's say, the rest of the county. Donald Trump walks on water out there, as one might suspect. But the thing is, Taliban Indiana has a very unusual set of gun laws. I had to deal with a firearms fondler who was a friend of a roommate of Christine and I, who came in strapping his Freedom Protector on a shoulder holster, and I looked directly at him and I said, because of Christine's mental illness, among other things, his name was Chris, and I said, Chris, go back to your car and secure your firearm. They're not allowed here in this house. Well, I've got a permit to carry anywhere I want.
Well, I don't give a goddamn.
I said, our roommate looked over at him and said, except when you go into somebody's home, you're not exactly a police officer. And I said, Chris, I'm not telling you to sell it. I'm not telling you to get rid of it. I'm telling you to go and secure it. It's not safe for you to have it in here. Because at that time, there were times when we didn't know when Christine would have problems with her medication or her perceptions. And she has, I mean, being an Army veteran and having had a secondary hobby in mixed martial arts, it would have been nothing if she had been able to get a hold of that weapon in a confused state and start popping off at people. So we had a standing rule in the house, no firearms unless you were a police officer. And he bitched and moaned, but finally complied. And that's the same way, I mean, it's posted on all these malls, no firearms. But I did not know that they had signed a Bill of Rights so that gun humpers could ignore that. Because then the good guy with a gun wouldn't have been a good guy with a gun. He would have been a law-breaking guy with a gun, as well as the guy that did the shooting of the people. And there is a reason they seized him and his weapon also to make sure that none of the bullets he fired went into any of the victims of the shooting, other than the shooter. My idiot brother started spouting off, well, if everybody'd been armed in Chicago, it'd been a much more polite thing, except for one thing. The guy was shooting from a sniper position, which means he was doing it in ambush.
Yeah, we're back. At least we bothered to point that out on this program, that, you know, defending against an ambush.
Yes, I know we do, Robin. But I have some good news. I talked to Gladys down in HR.
Yeah? Down at the shop?
You know how the boys in the shop love the program. We finally figured out what to do with King Joe. And we have you, Robin, to thank for it.
Oh, yeah?
And I gave Gladys a raise, and I'll tell you why I gave her a raise. She said that we ought to take a couple of the company buses and drive to the carnival in West Virginia and set King Joe up in the dunking tank, you know, where they throw things at targets and dunk him in the, while he's pontificating about how wonderful he is. But see, we're going to do it with a little Indiana style. We're not going to use baseballs. No, we're going to use basketballs.
Because Indiana.
And since they're, you know, why not? When I lived in Alaska, there was a...
I hear they got, maybe, I don't know.
Maybe
go to the souvenir shop in, say, French Lick.
Well, you know, and if we have enough fans, we might actually be able to get... I don't know if we can get Larry out of the confines of the Pacers front office, but, you know, why not? We could see how many times he could dunk Joe and Roe. I mean, he used to practice until he got 200 free throws in a row. But in Indiana, basketball is a religion. We have more than one religion in Indiana, most of us. One of them must be high school basketball, specifically.
We've all seen Hoosiers.
And you know, the line when they say basketball, high school basketball players are treated like gods. Mm-hmm. In Indiana, that during the single class basketball days, that was the God's honest truth. If you were a top player in a school, you were at the top of the social heap. And, you know, I am kind of old school. I wish they'd go back to single class basketball. That way, even small schools that became champions were the champion of the entire state, not just their class. I think it cheapened it, but I'm a traditionalist on that. But this good guy with a gun bullshit goes all the way back to D.C. Stevenson and his slimy little ass.
Klansman.
You once asked me what the fascination with right-wing politics in Indiana is. It's how much can we shit on the other guy if we're good, God-fearing Protestant white men, because I guarantee you Catholics in Indiana prior to the 1950s were not white. There were ads in the paper, Catholics need not apply, and things of this nature. And then you have these same said good God-fearing Protestants who sit there and go, well, we're a Christian nation. Bullshit. You're a lying bunch of idiots is what you are. Because the founding fathers are spinning over in their graves at the moment. I dare say that George Washington and Alexander Hamilton and the rest of that bunch would look over in shock and amazement that the religious have taken so much of the prime space in politics. Because the idea at the time of the founding, and this was the idealist in them, were that men of good conscience would put aside such trivialities for the betterment of all. Translation, if you were a wealthy white guy, you'd stick with the rest of the wealthy white guys and do what was good for wealthy white guys.
That was the plan.
And it worked beautifully up until, well, let's say, the 1840s, 1850s. And then things started to break down. But you're getting the same kind of rhetoric you were getting then, except when it comes to slavery, it's now guns. And I was playing with these ideas of, you know, holding telethons to find homes for homeless firearms and feeding of the ammunition thereof.
And you know what? Going back to your idea about the dunking tank, Scott in San Diego heard from, was it Gladys or Gloria in HR?
Gladys. Yeah, Gladys. Okay. Yeah, right. I gave her a 15% raise.
Good.
She's got grandkids on the way.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gladys got an update. Scott in San Diego says, never mind softballs and basketballs. Manchin says he won't do it unless the participants are tossing bags of cash at the spring-loaded dunk tank target. And I will add, it's okay if the money gets wet because it's not like Joe's never been involved in money laundering before. Ha.
Cowbell.
Thank you.
That's cowbell worthy yet. But, well, I mean,
he's been laundering coal dust off of cold cash for a very long time.
Well, you know, if he loves coal so much, why don't we just not deal with the baseballs and the basketballs, but, you know, grab some coal, some chunks of coal, and toss them at him until he dives into the tank. Then see how much he loves his coal.
Can the contents of the tank be coal slurry?
Oh, I say in West Virginia it would have to be. There's a famous situation where Ted Stevens, when the Exxon Valdez happened, said that within a year he would eat salmon out of the Prince William Sound. I don't believe he ever ate salmon out of the Sound after that. So
yeah, I kind of know.
Until we were fortunate enough for there to be a aircraft accident in the middle of the Alaskan bush, which lost us one astronaut and a corrupt Alaskan politician.
Oh, and going back to the shooting, the murders at the Greenwood Park Mall, the good guy with a gun is from Seymour, Indiana.
That's south of Bloomington, yeah.
Young Mr. Dickens.
That's in southern Indiana.
Yeah.
So he must have been coming up to the big city.
Well, he was there with his girlfriend. They were just having a mall day.
Okay.
But no, the names of the victims have been released, and I could be wrong, but I sense a pattern. The three victims, the three murder victims, were Pedro Pineda, Rosa Marian Rivera de Pineda, and Victor Gomez.
Wonder what the commonality there could be.
And of course, I don't know.
Sounds like a good doctor and Wasp family.
Well, just remember that the 10-year-old rape victim, the rapist. Right wing media has, they moved off of the it's a hoax, she's not real, 10-year-olds can't get pregnant. They moved on from that. And then they moved into, we got to do something about the crisis at the border because the rapist on that little 10-year-old girl was a Guatemalan illegal. And Victor Fuentes.
Well, here's the thing, Robin.
Then Fuentes.
Here's the thing. That goes back to both siderism.
In this case,
it's right wing nut jobs working both sides of the street at the same time, and both being absolutely correct and absolutely honest and absolutely this and absolutely the other, just like their God Emperor Donald the Cheesehead Trump.
Yeah, but take a minute.
Who could say opposite things 15 seconds apart, but he's always right.
Yeah, but seriously, take a minute with this. Right-wing media is covered up and with news of this alleged rapist, and they holler, Guatemalan, Guatemalan, Guatemalan. You've got a 20-year-old white guy with an AR-15 who's already in a compromised state because he's been, anytime you got one of these guys, it's like having clouds in the sky. There's a chance of rain. You got this situation. You've got a good chance of dude being an incel.
Well, yeah, my brother's among the incel,
so
I get a little nervous around that bunch.
For good reason. And so with this, and he's but then again, this is how stochastic terrorism works, Dave. If you holler crisis at the border, how many years have the Republicans been hollering about the brown people are coming, the brown people are coming, the brown people are coming?
Look at
what motivated the shooter in Buffalo. He went to deliberately waste African-American people. This guy just happens to...
If we're going to include the Southern Democrats who migrated into Reagan's party, that would be... That'd go back to the 1870s, 1880s. That kind of shit's been going on for a long time, Robin.
Yeah.
And then you've got... Then you've got just wondrous hypocrites like Jesse Lee and his human burrito, and among other things. And it's all normal to these people, Robin. It's so goddamn normal that they don't see anything wrong with any of it.
Well, right. This is taking your life in your hands to go and get a jug of milk and a loaf of bread down to the Wally World has become our new normal. And so what we will
go out on a date in the food court in Greenwood, Indiana.
Right. So hold on. So here's how it works. Second Amendment freedom breaks out at the mall or at the Wally World. Or at the parade, and we all, or at the elementary school.
Robin, it could be argued that's a First Amendment situation.
Hold on. And so our response is, "Oh my God, this is horrible! Oh, the tragedy of it all! Oh, we must do something!" And then it happens again. And that's how new normals develop. There's a generation, we've raised an entire generation or two of children now who know what to do when the bullets start flying as long as they haven't been hit yet. And they will eventually be moms and grandpas and granddads and grandmas and whatever, aunts and uncles, and they'll teach their children what to do when the bullets start flying, and we'll just be a country where the bullets fly, and the NRA will be happy, and the Republicans will be happy, and the pasty-faced old doughy white men will be happy. And, you know, they're kind of, I admit when things don't, for years I've said that, you know, strapping on heat because you're too much of a chicken shit to go to Wally World for a jug of milk and a loaf of bread without it is problematic. Well, now it's not. Now, thanks to young Elijah Dickin, we see and you know what's going to happen, Dave? Handgun sales are going to go through the roof. Until we get to the point where a good guy with a handgun wasn't enough and the attacker had taken up a defensible position and could only be taken out by somebody with another AR-15. And then we'll just be Haiti with cable. We'll be Somalia with cable. And I don't mean any negative connotations relative to ethnicity or anything. I'm talking about a broken down government, a broken down country that cannot do what a government is supposed to do of the people, by the people, and for the people.
I've ridden in cabs here in Indianapolis, and there are many African drivers. And several of them I've ridden with are from Somalia.
Same here in D.C.
They see the gun violence here, and they say, this is why I left home. You know.
Yeah. This feels unpleasantly like home.
Yeah. And I feel for these guys. Because
yeah, I've talked to a few of those.
Their lives come to a strange country who think they need to go back to, you know, all that racist bullshit. They don't understand why these people are yelling at them. They just came to this country to get away from getting murdered. And
you know, the funniest thing is I've talked to a lot of those cabbies in D.C. and they've told me the story of their exodus, about how they left Eritrea or Somalia or Ethiopia, what have you.
Yeah.
And they came, and they didn't come straight to America. They had stops along the way.
They'd go to Egypt or they'd go to another country.
And wind up in Europe, but they were not done because their goal was to come here. Because for some reason or another, we create this impression that here is a place to come to. And you want to talk
America,
you want
to start with nothing and become
you want to talk
whatever you want.
Yeah, you want to talk about false advertising? That's it.
And that false advertising has been going on since the beginning of the Republic.
I'd say pretty much. By the way, I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Guy with a gun. I was at a gas station on the peninsula this weekend in San Carlos, a nice suburb in the heart of Silicon Valley. Lots of old money down there as well. A guy walked in with a holster diagonal across his chest with a gun on full display. He was not a cop. Y'all in other states may be used to it, but for me, that's only the third time I've seen non-police people strapped. The other two times were in my misspent youth days. I love the San Francisco Bay Area the way you love West Virginia. Third generation San Franciscan. This is not normal. No, Matt, it's not, but they are desperate to make it normal. The whole thing, I swear, the whole thing is engineered. The whole idea of we must be an armed populace was born somewhere deep in the stinking bowels of the NRA. It was born in conjunction
after the Civil War when they converted the slave codes into the black codes.
Well, there's that. There's that. But I'm talking about this modern, you know, because people weren't running around strapped at the for most of the 20th century. This was born in the bowels of the NRA in conspiracy and conjunction with the gun manufacturers. Because the gun manufacturers are the single largest source of financial support for the NRA. It ain't member dollars. They couldn't have got into the financial shenanigans they got into Wayne the Peter and others, and they're still pending litigation. They couldn't have got into that without, you know, some real Jed Clampett walking around money, Dave. And by the way, I too love the San Francisco Bay Area, Matt. You have no idea. Sit around thinking, but you know, and there's a magnificent.
I've been through their airport, but not.
There's a magnificent plastic surgeon who does beautiful face work, and down at the bottom of his webpage it says, "I do not accept insurance." Damn it! Crank, fire up the print.
Oh,
press.
By the way, speaking of beautiful pictures, I did see the selfie you took. And I got to say, the lighting was beautiful, and it was a very well-done photo.
Well, thank you.
I reposted it on my Facebook page.
Aww.
So, I said, this is my friend Robin Kincaid. And bam. So that my sister would know who in the hell I'm talking about when I mention you. By the way, she on the 4th of July, she said a lot of my friends are holding a funeral today. And I said, yeah, I know. And I wouldn't have been there on the 4th if Christine hadn't needed to be there. But she needed to be there for her own mental health, and I needed to be there to support her. I can put aside my personal views and my idiot little brother and father for one day for her sake. But, you've got an arch conservative like my dad looking over at my sister and saying, the Republicans have got it wrong on education and a couple of other issues. My dad's for legalizing marijuana nationally and has been since the 80s. He's not a Johnny come lately to this argument. But then again, my dad was a politician in the 70s who ran for city council. And the unfortunate thing in this country, Robin, is we don't encourage on our side participation in the electoral process, even down to the city county level or the school board level. We've needed to organize like that for the last 35 years.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And by God, if we're going to save this country from fascism, in the same manner that our fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers did back in the 40s, well, then, by God, start running now. Do not leave an unopposed candidate anywhere in the country. And I say that as somebody who's lived in a place where there were decent people who were Republicans, like Bill Hudnut, who used to run unopposed. But you can't count on somebody being a Bill Hudnut or a Dick Lugar. And I don't think either of those gentlemen would have been called a flaming liberal, except now they'd have been called an outright communist by some of these assholes. Todd Rokita is the Attorney General of the
Yeah, I've become unfortunately aware of him.
Rakita, I believe he's one of those those right wing nutters who were going on and on about a woman shutting down her body during a rape and all this bullshit. Todd Rakita has been known to put his foot in his mouth on more than one occasion.
No, it's not so. I mean, based on he was off my radar until last week, and then following up doing some reading, it's not so much that he gets his foot in his mouth. What everybody's waiting around to find out is how he's going to get the other one in there with it.
Oh, he will. Oh, he is a talented man. They do have some talent there on the Republican side, Robin. I have no illusions that I'm about to disabuse any of you progressives and liberals out there who think they're idiots. No, they're not. They're trained. They're taught. They're brought up in the time they're little itty-bitty fascists, just out of their swastika clothing. After they get through their Mein Kampf and their Ayn Rand library, and then they go on to such institutions as Indiana University, the alma mater of my favorite fictional lawyer, and the alma mater of some not so favorite lawyers, Dan Quayle, among them, but
the Latin scholar,
the one I actually like is William H. McBride. For those of you who've not seen Goliath, go do it. And I am an alum of Indiana University, so I take it as a personal affront for them to have given a degree of any variety to Dan Quayle. But the thing is, Bloomington, Indiana is one of the bluest cities you'd ever want to meet, but it's in a sea of red. I mean, John Bruno talks about being a blue dot in Bloomington. We're a great big blue dot. The thing is, nothing is going to get done. I think the best thing that Chuck Schumer should have done 6 months ago is looked over at Joe Manchin and said, "You keep this shit up, I'm going to remove you from as chairman of the Resources Committee," which would have triggered Joe into going over to the Republicans, even though he hates Mitch McConnell with a white hot passion. And who doesn't? But the Democrats could look over and go, "We weren't able to get anything done because of him anyway. Give us a few more senators and we'll make this right." But they lost their chance. And I'm not the only person to have thought this or even been original to it. Robert Reich recently wrote an article advocating that very thing, that they should have taking him off his committee. But then he and Marjorie Taylor Greene could have, sent love letters to each other across the aisle and across the Capitol.
And across the building, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. I'm going to have to get drunk after the program tonight, Robin. I've got to wash this
away. I understand.
Tequila
is, after all, and other forms of booze, the worse the better. Brain bleach.
Well, the Fireball's only a 66 proof, but I have a low alcohol tolerance anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Oh Lord, that stuff's like pancake syrup. That's a hangover.
Yeah, that's hangover in a bottle, and I got the little travel sizes.
Yeah, you feel like you're drinking less when you use the little mini bottles, don't you?
Well, it takes me 2 days to get through it. I mean, I'm such a lightweight in the alcohol department that my sister looked over at me on the 4th of July and said, "You only get one hard cider," because she knows that I can't handle my alcohol. Save my ass. I'm like, "Yes, ma'am." One. Yes. All right. But I always look over at it, and I keep hearing Bugs Bunny's voice as I manipulate the bottle. I'm only using it for medicinal purposes.
In case you see a snake. Oh. Right. Yeah. Well, Dave, I'm going to roll because I want to get to a couple other calls before the program ends. But it's
all
been great.
Right, Robin, you guys take care. I thought I helped people understand.
Yes, well, I was going to say thank you for the
on here.
Yeah, thank you for the geographic and socio-cultural political primer on.
Always glad to help.
Taliban, Indiana.
I'll let Gladys know she got her cowbell.
Yes.
She's going to be
Tell Gladys and tell her we're working on the bags of money.
All right. Well, tell you what, if you throw it in my direction, we could offer Joe free crucifixions for him and all his family. Hell, we could make a living rosary out of it. His crew, you know. I think we could do that, Robin.
And what's that Midwestern specialty that what do they call that? A hot meat or something like that?
No, the tenderloins.
No, not the pork tenderloins. That's a different thing. But it's just ground beef, but it's got this repulsive name that just makes me cringe every time I read it.
Loose meat?
Yes, loose meat.
Yeah. Loose meat, and it's not generally ground. It's usually shredded roast.
Oh, okay.
And that's not really an Indiana thing. That's more of an Ohio thing.
Is that an Ohio thing? Okay.
Yeah, I think it is, because in Indiana,
Midwestern states look the same to me.
Deep fried tenderloins.
Yeah, no, had that. I've had that in biscuit form at Hardee's, and it's pretty good.
Oh, that's not a real tenderloin, honey. We're talking tenderloins the size of your head. Taking a 5-ounce piece of pork, pounding it out.
It's a schnitzel.
It's a schnitzel without the liver paste. Yes.
Well, not all schnitzels have liver paste.
But yes, it's a schnitzel, and And that shouldn't be surprising considering the number of Germans that settled in Taliban, Indiana.
Right. Yeah, that whole post-1848 thing.
Yeah.
The purge.
Yeah.
The purge. That's why 1848's on the Wisconsin flag.
All right, Robin. Well, I'll talk to you later. You get to the others.
All right. You have a good...
I will talk to you sometime in a week or so.
All right. You take care. Give our best to Christine. See you, Dave.
I will.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Dave calling from the blind. And again, we've got $380 to go in fundraising. $80 finishes off last week. And if we could finish off last week on a Monday instead of a Thursday, that would be fantastic. And, well, then $300 for today. And I don't know. Hope springs eternal. But I've got a story here. And I'm going right back to the phones. but this one has to be mentioned. The law of intended consequences, not unintended, but intended. The law of intended consequences is on bold display in Texas, where, according to the Associated Press, a doctor based in San Antonio by the name of Dr. Hesian Munoz said that a woman came to him because she was in the middle of, and we're going to have an art of word knowing moment here. She was in the middle of having a miscarriage, and pretty please, this isn't like me getting all obsessive compulsive about I could care less versus I couldn't care less. This is important. We have got to stop using the word miscarriage. We've absolutely got to stop. We have got to start using the medical, official, real, no-kidding term instead of some piece of antiquated English jargon. For instance, Dr. Munoz revealed that a patient recently came to him while she was in the midst of a spontaneous abortion. The article continues, and was developing what the AP describes as a dangerous womb infection. She was becoming septic. But we can't use a fancy, highfalutin $10 word like septic at the Associated Press, because that... And spontaneous... Oh, four syllables. That'll never do! Wait a minute. Miscarriage is four syllables. Miscarriage. I guess some would argue that it's three. Miscarriage. Never mind that vowel there in the midst of things. But the bottom line is, the young woman had been pregnant. She experienced a spontaneous abortion. This is important. The fetus had no chance of survival. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Nada. I guess this is one of those situations where they'd say, you know, the Aaron Hawleys of the world would say, well, that's not an abortion. Even though the medical term is spontaneous abortion. But here's the horror of it. The young woman lost liters of blood. Liters. And eventually lost consciousness and had to be put on a breathing machine. Because, thanks to the Republicans in Texas, the doctor now has to wait until no fetal heartbeat, do you see the dick fingers? Heartbeat can be detected. And that did not happen until the next day, when the woman had lost consciousness and lost liters of blood. You know, it's a pity they didn't save those liters of blood and go pour them over the head of Greg Aspott and Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton. Just have a mass baptizing. Get all Kerry on their ass. Dr. Munoz said, we physically watched her get sicker and sicker and sicker. And we couldn't do anything when we should have been doing it, because that's how long it took for no fetal heartbeat. And this is not how you treat a woman in the midst of a spontaneous abortion. And it wasn't how we treated them before Dobbs. But now, a woman must die, because in Texas there is no regard for the life of the mother. Dr. Munoz explained it was like the mom's life's in danger. We must evacuate the uterus by whatever means that may be, whether it's surgical or medical, that's the treatment. The art of medicine is lost and actually has been replaced by fear. And that's the point where I disagree with Dr. Munoz. It has not been replaced by fear. It has been replaced by toxic, hateful misogyny. There is not a pro-life Republican who is not absolutely filled to the brim with hatred for women folk. Plain and simple. And there's no follow-up that says that she's okay. Or gonna be okay. Liters of blood. And Republicans are okay with that. Because they revere life. Please, 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 do what you can.
Stop telling us which words to use, Robin.
Please. Whenever you see a story that features that word, please think spontaneous abortion. If you talk to your friends about it, say, I read the most horrifying story about a woman being left to die because she was having a spontaneous abortion, but the fetus had a heartbeat. This is one of those that feels important. This is one of those language issues that feels like it has real world implications for real world women experiencing real world crisis pregnancies, the real kind, not the across the street from Planned Parenthood kind. Spontaneous abortion. Thank you, Kat, so very much. Look at us, we're down to $280. Friday, last week, is fully funded now. And we are $20 into today's funding. So, about a half an hour left in the program. Maybe we can scrounge up that $200. Thank you, Kat, so much. Thank you so very much. And having waited ever so patiently, let's check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin. The thing I worry about, you see, one of the many things I worry about is when I call in, that people will contact you and ask for their money to be sent back. And I don't want that to happen. So far,
that has not happened.
And, you know, it occurred to me while listening to you and Dave from Indiana speaking, he and I are not unlike the concept of traffic and weather together on the 8th. It seems he calls and then I call. It's something about his voice that just draws me right into the conversation. But a further word of explanation is in order, Robin, and it begins with a question. And I know you, did you ever do local TV news, anything associated with that?
Never anything on camera. I did I did voice work and voiceover work.
Back in this is before your time, I guess, back in the 60s, the horrible 60s, with political assassinations and riots in the street and the Vietnam conflict going on with no end in sight, no light even at the end of the tunnel, no tunnel even. Most local newscasts and even a couple of national newscasts would end their broadcast with what was referred to as an elephant story. Are you familiar with that term, an elephant story?
By the time I got into it, it was just called a kicker.
Okay, yeah, it's along those same lines. Basically, it was something lighthearted after a parade of horrible events in your nation, your world, your city, your town, your state.
And the elephants come last in the parade. I get it.
Well, it was the origin of the term elephant story was when the circus would come to town, the big Ringling Brothers Circus or one of the smaller regional circuses, every TV station worth the name felt it was important to have a film crew out there to watch the parade of elephants from the railroad station, because you know they didn't fly. They came in on the train to film the parade of the elephants going from the train station through the town to the fairgrounds for the three-day visit of the circus or whatever it was.
You know, you remind me of a great John Prine song. It's called Sabu Visits the Twin Cities Alone.
Sabu Visits the Twin Cities Alone. I don't know it, but I think I like it already.
You must play it. Just look it up, play Sabu Visits the Twin Cities Alone. If nothing but for the great line, because John Prine. The roadie had the scabies and the rabies and the flu.
Oh, my dear. That's poetry.
Hey, Ma, look, that's here comes the elephant boy. Yeah.
The words of the prophets are written.
On the subway walls.
Where you can get a 6-inch sandwich for the price of a 12-inch. No, that ain't right. Anyway, back in TV, back when TV was more or less reputable, TV news, they would end the Parade of Horribles with an elephant story. And here's where the word of explanation comes in. All I was trying to do, Robin, was send you an elephant story. And actually, I sent it.
I just couldn't figure out how to work it in.
Well, see, basically, after the, and don't get me wrong, the Manchin monologue was spot on. I don't disagree with anything, although the fault here, dear Brutus, is now with the stars. It is with the voters of West Virginia who put that ass hat into office. But that not with.
But you should have seen the choice we had.
Oh, I'm sure it was horrible. I'm sure it was. It couldn't have been. Yeah, if he was the better of the lesser of the evils involved on the ballot there, I can only imagine what his opponent was like. My God. But anyway, all I was trying to do. Want me to resend it?
No, I've got it right here in front of me. Apparently, you were watching CNN right before airtime.
Yeah, I was.
You were watching Jake Tapper.
Yeah.
And it ain't an elephant story; it's a shark story because it's shark eating. It's shark eating white. It's shark eating white people season. I saw a story in this. I just kind of cruised on by. I was like, no, I'm not going to waste any time on this. I saw a story, and here I am. I saw a story that said more sharks may be attacking people because they look like fish. Really? We look more like fish now than we did before. Is this an evolution thing, or I mean,
I'm checking my various appendages and things.
Because
and
I think if you study your evolution, you'll find that whales actually evolved into being land mammals, kind of like a wolf. But then they went back in the water and re-evolved into whales.
And you know why, don't you? Because even at that primitive stage, they couldn't figure out a way to disguise themselves as Little Red Riding Hood's grandmother, much less get into bed. Oh, what did you bring me? What goodies do you have in your basket, Little Red Riding Hood? I could be wrong. I mean, it's happened before. But they were like,
there was some hidden filthiness in some of those wonderful, wonderful cartoons. I think Tex Avery was behind this, and
well, to be sure,
because Granny's in the bed, she's got the flannel nighty on and the hairnet. What's the matter, Wolfie? Ain't you gonna eat me? And Wolfie responds, "Ain't got time, Granny. Hit the bricks."
Eat, eat, eat. Doesn't anybody fuck anymore? Well, why do you drag me down to the gutter, Robin? I so desperately want to not go there.
And here we are back with the monkey.
Yeah, here we go. Robin's losing it all over again. It's only Monday, folks. It ought to be a banner.
This is not my fault. Doesn't anybody? I'm beginning to think the answer is no.
Well.
If I swear to God, if I get ghosted one more time, I'm gonna go down to Bad Habits and buy a nun's uniform. Bad Habits. Wouldn't that be what a great name for a business that sells naughty nun costumes.
Oh.
Bad Habits.
Bad Habits, well. don't get me started on nuns. But anyway, back at the beach, what was going on there with the sharks?
Yeah, so they teased it, and I can imagine. I know what it's like to be young and be a writer at CNN. And you're looking for these moments. Trust me, you're living for them. So it's scrolling across the teleprompter for Jake Tapper, multimillionaire member of the multimillionaire for-profit media. And the reader says, the relationship between beachgoers and sharks isn't exactly chummy. And yes, you are correct. Chum is the chopped up fish parts, or fish blood that you toss into the water by the bucketful to attract other fish to catch. And it's spectacularly effective with sharks. So, as you noted, if you're a swimmer at the beach, the last thing you'd want to be is anything even remotely connected to chumminess or chum-like.
Yes.
But somebody probably had a beer bought for them at CNN over that.
Yeah, because to me it sort of indicates that somebody, whether it was Jake or whether it was the news writer, didn't know what chum was, first of all, and didn't know that chumminess was the wrong word to use in a shark story. I mean,
No, I think this was entirely intentional.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, they were proud. They were waiting for Jake to read that, and the writers were sitting there like elbowing each other and giving each other noogies and shit. Chummy, you made it. Or maybe he came up with that all by himself. He's a creative.
You're the second person who's pointed that out, because I posted it on Facebook before I sent it to you. And one of my friends down in Texas, where they know everything about sharks in landlocked Texas, is she thought it was
Texas
clever wordplay.
Texas isn't landlocked.
Parts of it are.
No, the entire state of Texas is not landlocked. It has a Gulf Coast.
No, I mean a place within Texas that's nowhere near any appreciable water is what I meant.
Oh, okay.
I know you're the chief guru of the word knowing, but with a little explanation, I'll get out of the reprimand. But anyway, we were screaming out for an elephant story. That's the only reason I sent that.
No, yes, I agree.
But I just don't know. Now treat me like I'm a young person who knows absolutely nothing with this following question.
Okay.
Because I haven't really looked at the news or anything. Did we have day one of the Bannon trial today as scheduled?
You know, I don't know. I haven't seen any coverage. Let me check the breaking stuff.
Because usually, don't they seat the jury on the first day?
Well, you start trying to seat the jury.
Well, that can always be exciting when you have lawyers who want to throw a wrench or a bucket of sand or chum even into the proceedings.
And for
my friends north of the border, another connection to the word CHUM, it was a once great radio station. I don't know if it's still around, but because they start all of their stations with C. And then down here, it's W or K. And then south of us, it's usually X. And that's going to be on the radio quiz. So I hope you wrote that down.
Yeah, right. Yes. Okay, so far I'm not seeing anything. I did see a piece about how his own radio show had convicted him. Said he's guilty. Guilty.
Did you see on CNN last night the special one-hour documentary about Bannon?
No, nothing I did not.
Nothing really new in it, but it just brought home the point of what a sleazeball he is. If I were a sleazeball, I would protest the attachment of that moniker to him, because he's worse than a sleazeball. Because sometimes sleazeballs are sleazeballs without knowing. He's doing it willfully and not blindly and knowingly.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And has said so in public.
Okay, there it is. Yes, we have an answer. Steve Bannon's contempt trial began despite his attempts to delay it.
Here you go.
They agreed on 22 qualified jurors today and then called it a day.
That's a good start, I guess. I mean,
I just love this sentence because this is one of those aspects of jury trials. You know, when you're trying to pull a jury, you're looking for people who don't know anything, which is not helpful. U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols said last week he was hopeful that enough jurors would be found who haven't been paying close attention to the January 6th committee hearings and don't know much about Bannon so they could fairly decide the case.
Well, really, that shouldn't be a problem because that's the problem with this country. Most people are not paying any attention. It's bad enough that you have the disinformation people out there polluting what airwaves as there are with the nonsense. But an even bigger problem, I think, is people who either don't know or don't care or both. That's how we got into this mess.
My point.
There you go. So they found 22 of them. What were they, trolling them with Clark bars out the courtroom window, or how they get snag them?
Well, I wonder how many of them were like, no, I don't know nothing about no Steve Bannon. We're gonna quit.
What is the venue? Is it D.C.? Is that where the
yeah? It's the U.S. It's the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. So I guess tomorrow they will show up and continue with voir dire because I don't think they're gonna seat 22 people. I don't know what the size of a federal criminal jury is.
Well, that's where the creative excuse making comes into it. And some excuses are valid, let's face it. Now, what if they exhaust the fair number of the 22 and they've got fewer than the needed number? Do they go to the jury?
They keep trying. Because, you know, each side has a certain number of peremptory objections. And you say, nope, don't want them. They just can't be. The peremptory challenges can't be used for improper purposes like, you know, racism, sexism, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but we are dealing with Steve Bannon and whoever he hired to represent him. So yeah. I'd say all bets are off.
Right, exactly.
There may be all manner of
I mean, and I don't know. I guess this isn't. No, it's federal, so there's not going to be any TV coverage.
Well, we'll get those lovely pen and ink sketches that they color in and then show on TV. And I hope whoever the artist is just as cruel and accurate as they can be in depicting the drawings.
Well, we will know if upon seeing the drawings, Scott, of Steve Bannon, if we will know how accurate it is if we are suddenly hit with a whiff of the smell of rancid hot dog water.
Yeah, but that's not conveyed visually with any ease. I'm talking about, see, in my mind, if I had any artistic skill, I'd have my pad on my knee and my crayon, and I'd have you. By the time I was through, you'd have like Jabba the Hutt with crazy hair, you know, and wearing double dress shirts, you know, that would be.
Edie, doesn't anybody fuck anymore? Sorry. Where did that come from? I've heard it, but
it's a joke. It's Red Riding Hood. It's the old Red Riding Hood story with a twist, where she's in bed dressed as Granny in the flannel nightshirt and the hairnet.
Oh,
and all
no.
That. And the wolf says, "Little Red Riding Hood, I'm gonna eat you," you know. And then she replies, "Little Red Riding Hood replies, eat, 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 etc." For the faint-hearted in the audience, I'm not. Now you got me snorting and laughing, but
sorry. I'm kind of glad I saved you to last because. Yeah, after everything else, we needed that.
I'll be a wreck after this. But anyway, I'm going to watch this trial with interest, at least the coverage that gets out there, because we cannot allow this person, and I use that word loosely, to get away with anything, because he has stated from his own little podcast or whatever and his own little public pronouncements that he is up to no good. I mean, in his mind, he's doing the Lord's work, okay? But in the mind of the rest of us, he's up to no good. He's rat-fucking the entire country. And even he's even tried to, and the documentary on CNN went into this, he's even, he bought a 16th or a 13th century monastery, I believe,
in Italy, yeah,
and wanted to set up operations there so that he could take his rat-fucking endeavors into other parts of the world. Now, that ought to frighten people, or at least make them say, huh, what? And look into it further. But again, you're dealing with a populace who doesn't know, doesn't care, or both. And that is prime farmland for mischief makers. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but that's what
don't think you are.
That's what got us into the problem in this country. And to the extent that we can take some of these players out of commission, the better off we're going to be, I think. Now, check the mailbox with that. With my performance so far, have you gotten requests for refunds yet? I hope not.
No, and I would appreciate it if you would stop putting that suggestion into people's minds. In fact, when I announced Cat's kindness, our pal Christopher jumped in and said, thanks, Cat. And so now we are down to $270 to go. Thank you, Christopher.
Well, that's good. That's good, because ketchup is not a good thing. I don't mean the condiment. I mean, playing ketchup is not a good thing in an organization such as this.
I wholeheartedly agree.
You know? And it's not a heavy lift if all of us lift up a little segment.
Well, I don't know how long it's been since we've had a week begin that we actually got down to zero, but 270 is pretty nice.
Yeah, that's workable. I mean, when you get into four digits or the high three digits, you walk in with being loaded down, and your steps are not as sure and steady as you would like for them to be. And that's, I mean, you get the working conditions ought to be primo, and that's where the listeners and the Horn family come in, I think.
I agree.
So what about that mansion guy? What are we going to do about him? When is he up for renewal?
We renegotiate his contract in 2024. But again, I go back to what I said earlier. If you are tired of being ruled by the king of the hillbillies, then please vote like your life depends on it. Support candidates in Georgia. Support the Democratic nominee in Florida. Support Tim Ryan in Ohio. Support the nominee in Wisconsin. Support the nominee in Missouri. Support Charles Booker in Kentucky. Stan, God, I mean, it's loathsome and noxious, but wouldn't it be nice to put Rand Paul's pelt on the door and welcome Charles Booker to the Senate of the United States of America?
I would send the pelt to a lab to have it analyzed before I put it on anybody's
door. Well, there's that.
I don't know what that is. That could be tribal stuff. Is it some kind of mutant lab experiment by a demented scientist that originated as a tribal? And you know what tribal they were, those tribals.
No, absolutely.
But now, let me ask you this, since you've been in West Virginia for some time, and I'm old enough to remember Robert Byrd, who was a longtime senator from West Virginia. How does Manchin compare as a senator, if not a person, in the minds of the West Virginia citizens? Do they like him for different reasons than
Manchin? Manchin?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Byrd is Byrd is respected among a certain number of a certain segment of people for being a man who could change.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because he did over time. And he was, I would say, a constitutional scholar. I don't think that's too heavy a compliment.
He was, and he got justified praise for standing up and yelling, "Wait!"
Yes.
As we were running off to slaughter a million innocent Iraqis.
And in terms of good constituent service, he brought back the projects.
Well, he finally made the United States pay a little bit for the privilege of gouging, blasting, burning, torturing, killing, maiming, and otherwise ruining the lives of over 100,000 miners and as many more of their families over the course of a century.
And wasn't he brought in?
And they called him the King of Pork for it.
But wasn't he brought in on a stretcher for a critical vote once?
It might have been wheeled in or something. No, the stretcher was the... No, he was not present for the impeachment vote at the trial of Andrew Johnson. No, that was the guy on the stretcher.
No, but wasn't he... Maybe I am thinking of somebody else, but I thought that Byrd was really ill toward the end there, and there was some critical vote that he did not miss. Maybe I'm misremembering, or.
But he enjoys that respect, and he brought a lot to West Virginia, and it's terrible. It's God knows we deserved it, and then some. But nobody thinks that Joe Manchin is the second coming of Robert Byrd. Robert Byrd was a scholar, remember, and you know he was a conservative Democrat. But at the end of his life, he came around to realizing that, you know, I'm going to die and I don't need all that coal money anymore, so I can finally tell the truth about the coal industry. And he did. But remember, because he was a conservative Democrat, Richard M. Pinhead Nixon, offered Robert Byrd a seat on the Supreme Court of the United States.
I remember that.
And Byrd said, no thanks. I want to stay in the Senate. You know, remember, he was Senate Majority Leader, what, twice?
Yeah, as I recall.
But, no, opponents to Joe Manchin. We had a guy named John Racy, who owns a bunch of shit in West Virginia and lives in Florida. He got the Republican nomination and got his ass handed to him by Manchin a couple of times, and people really hated John Racy. So they were kind of eager to vote for Joe, and... Well, if it meant keeping him out of the governor's mansion, bonus. And then this last time through, he faced Attorney General Patrick Pill-Pushin' Patty Morrissey and beat him, although the margin was a bit narrower. He was primaried by an individual backed by out-of-state money. She got 38% of the vote and was lionized for a while. Okay. But, you know, he cruised to victory, and he will probably cruise to victory again, although there are some interesting possibilities. I don't know if it'll play out this way. But you have to remember, Joe threw all of his capital behind, because, see, we had to have an election because we lost a congressional seat here. And so there was a guy, that, you know, I just call him Looney Mooney, Alex Mooney. He's actually from Maryland. He doesn't know beans about being a West Virginian. But he got a seat in the maggot wave. And then he and a guy named McKinley. McKinley represented the part of West Virginia that was Morgantown. Mooney is from the Eastern Panhandle. And they had to fight it out in a steel cage death match to see who would stay a congressman and who would go home. Joe Manchin threw all of his political capital behind McKinley, and McKinley got his ass handed to him. So Mooney stayed a congressman, McKinley went home, and there's some talk that McKinley may now run for the Republican nomination for senator in 24, which would set up a beautifully ironic match between Joe Manchin and the guy Joe Manchin threw his political capital behind, You can see what fun that's going to be.
Yeah, the possibilities are. Now, is there? Did you say there's talk of people running against Manchin in 24?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's talk about McKinley coming from the Republican right, but
no, I mean on our side.
Yeah, I mean we'll put up somebody who doesn't have a chance, because if you run as a Democrat against Joe Manchin, you're over. You're done. I mean, if you have hopes of a political future in West Virginia, let's say you're an up-and-comer in the House of Delegates or the State Senate, and you then run against Joe and you lose, because you will, in the primary, your political career in West Virginia is done. Done, 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 done.
Well, how many voters are there in West Virginia? I mean, I was wrong some time ago when I estimated the population.
You know, so we're around 1.5 million people.
Evenly split, would you say, or 60-40, or?
You mean in terms of politics?
Yeah.
It's no longer a binary. It's a trinary. It's Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. And Democrats still hold a slight edge. Republicans are probably, there are probably more registered independents than anybody else in this state, I'm guessing.
And they move the needle one way or another, depending.
Right, because they get to vote in either primary. Democrats have to vote in the Democratic primary. Republicans have to vote in the Republican primary. Independents can choose.
Well, no, all I'm saying is, you know, and opportunities when you miss them, opportunities to make a change when you miss them, are even worse than not even taking them. So that when the Democrats run somebody, they've got to run somebody who, first of all, is believing and heartfelt believing the stuff that is going to affect West Virginians in a positive way, and show some skill set that would indicate that they can do that if elected, and have to be a viable alternative, an electable alternative to Manchin. I'm sure there's got to be somebody like that walking around West Virginia. And I understand the machine and all of that, but this guy is not doing anybody, left, right, or center, any favors. I mean, he's doing right, the folks on the right, favors. But I mean, in terms of your senator representing you as one half of the delegation in the U.S. Senate, he is not doing anybody any good other than himself, obviously. And that's where, if I were one of the West Virginia voters, I would look at the situation and say, well, wait a minute, we can do better. Everybody wants to do better. Or am I just the ultimate optimist?
Better, no, it's just that better is such a fluid term. West Virginia's never known better. I don't mean we don't know better. I mean, we've never known what better feels like.
Yeah, well, that there is some of that.
But we, you know, again, boring stories from the past. I remember when Barack Obama was swanning around coal country saying, and it was one of those fill-in-the-blank places. He said it in Southern Illinois. I want to make Southern Illinois the Saudi Arabia of coal. And then he went to Ohio and said, I want to make Ohio the Saudi Arabia of coal. And I think he said the same in, I want to make West Virginia the Saudi Arabia of coal. And I was thinking at the time, dude, this is not a good look. I don't think any of us want to be the Saudi Arabia of anything. Especially not the women's. But really, it's the larger issue of the resource curse. If you have resources under your dirt, you will not be better off for it.
No, because people will make hay with it, will make fortunes with it, and they don't care who they step on, hurt, kill, or injure, or make ill in the process.
Right. So you wind up, and it's the same story. It doesn't ethnicity. Nigeria and oil, West Virginia and coal, Alberta and the tar sands, and you have the appearance of something that looks like prosperity. You know, same thing with the same thing with North Dakota, where you can, you know, where during the boom, the oil sands boom, you could pay $5,000 a month for a single wide trailer for rent. I mean, that's usually how it plays out. And so a place like West Virginia, we don't know what it would be like to not be a resource colony. And the best we can hope for is that when coal finally dies out once and for all, we'll just be forgotten. We will just slip back into the obscurity that we enjoyed before the Hatfields and the McCoys started shooting at each other across the river.
And won't be encumbered with a lot of people showing up every so often saying, I'm here to help you.
Yeah, because, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, the tourism industry is amazing. It's growing, but it brings its own problems. There's nowhere to rent here anymore. Finding a place to rent is impossible. The rents have gone through the roof. Because it's a lot easier for somebody who owns property to turn it into an Airbnb and make as much make twice as much in a year as you would renting a place.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, Lee in New York, points out 448,900 registered Republicans, 444,600 registered Democrats, and 275,000 independents. So slightly more by about 4,300 Republicans over Democrats. It was not that way even 20 years ago.
No, hell no. Well, I'm old enough to remember when it was you couldn't win in any state of any race of any consequence if there were an R after your name.
I mean, it was that way. It was that way in Alabama before Reagan. Sure it was.
Well, maybe it's a matter of people looking over the timeline and saying, you know, here's where we are now, and let's look back and see if there's anything we can learn in terms of modifying our attitudes, opinions, and behaviors to make now be more like then to some extent. Because the main reason that I'm a Democrat is more often than not, you're going to get a better deal from the Democrats than you will ever get from the Republicans.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm speaking just as an ordinary individual. I'm not a high roller and I don't light my cigars with $100 bills. Okay? I'm just talking as an average everyday person, and I'll bet you that's the biggest segment of West Virginia is average ordinary people who are just trying to get along. And then look at your people like your Mansions and your other, your governor or your state people. And what sort of deal are you getting, folks? And isn't it a time that you renegotiated on your own behalf? I mean, my voice is not going to carry that far, but God damn, if I can see it, certainly if you're in the midst of it, unless you've got a Stockholm syndrome going on or you're just not engaged. Certainly, people have to know it on some basic level, just as human beings walking around. I mean, come on. And maybe they think that it's too late to do anything, that even no matter what they do, nothing's ever going to change. Well, that's not a good attitude to have until you're dead. Once you're dead, you don't count anymore, except as Worm Buffet or whatever. But as long as you're upright and above ground and have a voice and a vote, you should have some say in the matter. And you should make that abundantly clear to these people who are saying, well, I'm so-and-so and I'm here to help you. Well, we'll see.
And I've got to go because we're over time. But, they created an industry that was centered on soft voter suppression, where, you know, the government is not the people. The government is some foreign entity that somehow malevolently rules your life. Yeah, and they worked it out really nicely because on the one hand, You know, the government gives out welfare to people who won't work. That's the right wing. And over here on our side, it's the government won't do a goddamn thing for people who are suffering and need help, and they make it impossible to get.
So another way of putting that would be the government has been on the grift all along in West Virginia.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, the story of the Bourbon governors, that's what they're called, the Bourbon governors, the first governors of West Virginia after 1863.
Bourbon like the drink?
Yeah, they're called, they are the Bourbon governors. And it's more, I think it has more to do with a relation, with comparing them to the Bourbon kings of France.
Okay.
Bourbon is a French word, not a Kentucky word.
Does Mitch know?
But they, stop it.
Does Rand know? Does that thing on its head know?
But, go ahead. But no, there was always this notion that West Virginia was a hard place, West Virginia was a remote place, rural. It was hard to make a living here. You couldn't have vast plantations or huge farms. And there wasn't much in the way of industrial development, although there was industrial development fairly early on. Salt works, among other things. But the sense was that West Virginia could never be anything if we didn't have outside money coming in telling us what to do. And that's pretty much been the dominant philosophy for the entire history of this state. And, you know, Joe Manchin is no different. Oh, we're gonna go on a junket to Japan and find us some car factories that'll come here and make cars. We can't do anything on our own. We have been subjected to a century plus long learned helplessness.
And that'll take some time and effort to undo to the extent that it even could be.
Right. And there are those among us who have worked on it, but and continue to work on it, but it's difficult. You know, we've got a lot of craftspeople, we've got a lot of entrepreneurs, but you know, it's hard to make a living making jewelry. And I try whenever I find a little pair of earrings or whatever. I buy stuff that's been locally made. But you can't raise a family on it. You can't pay a mortgage on it. There are a lot of people doing, we've got a multi-million-dollar business that's just gobbling up land for all it's worth. And a lot of people work for them. And it's a tourism business. And in many ways, they operate on the same model that a coal company operated on.
So it's heavy industry of a different type that still will inevitably screw the people.
Well, to the extent that they're taking rafts down the New Ngali rivers, they're an inflatable industry. Because the rafts are filled with air.
Good West Virginia air, I would hope.
You betcha.
What's left of it. All right, Robin, you got to go.
Scott, you have a good night, my friend.
All right, take care, and take care of Horn family, wherever you are. Stay safe, stay well, get injected whenever possible, and keep your mask on.
Here,
and
here.
Stop eating, goddammit.
Eat.
All right, well, don't stop, just taper off. All right, Robin, take care.
All right, see you, Scott. Bye now. And so we come to the end of this Moran Monday. And, it's been a thing. Thank you again to the individual who took care of 2 days of fundraising. That was so, so, so big. Thanks to all of you for joining in the program. Thank you, Ben Birch, again, for getting White Rose Society back up and running. Like I said, I will catch up with what we missed from last week in the archive there. Oh, I know what I was going to mention. We're nearing a milestone over on Podbean. No, it's nothing like the numbers that Pink Shrek puts up, but still, for a little bitty program that's listener-funded, that stays afloat on the goodwill of the people who share their precious finite time engaging in the program, reaching a half a million downloads is pretty damned impressive. And we'll be there before summer's out. We may be there by August. And that just absolutely blows my mind. It's a heck of a thing. And we'd probably already be there if they didn't shut me down every time, every month, for too many uploads of my unlimited uploads. Go figure. But thank you. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to all of our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. So very much. Hopefully we'll get a little further into it tomorrow. Fundraising goal tomorrow will be $570. That's not nearly as terrifying as it has been. Thank you. And again, thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve earlier. Steve, you know I love you. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Do please go over to Grist and read that article that I referenced earlier. It's well worth your time. It's a little time capsule sort of thing, and I think it's mostly a pretty good piece of writing, too. Anthracite notwithstanding. And like I said earlier in the program, please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It really does mean the world to Appalachia. It's Appalachia's future. Please get your booster. CDC is getting kind of noisy about it. Get your booster! Wash your hands, don't touch your face, wear the mask. We're back to the masks. Use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. And if somebody comes toddling towards you down the sidewalk saying, "Well, we didn't know we were being had by Joe Manchin. We thought he was negotiating in good faith." Avoid that simpleton like the plague, because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.